But he had two phones and his earbuds, and he never looked at his phone. And I found that notable. And I had by that point interviewed, you know, the other four major players in his company, being Desiree Perez, the CEO, Juan Perez, her husband, and the president of, you know, Roc Nation Sports, who's a, you know, an old friend of Jay-Z's and who ran Baseline Studios. There's Tay-Tay Smith, who he's known since he was a kid in the Marcy Projects, who's the head of A&R. And then there's Jay Brown, who is the chairman of the company. So Michael Rubin I interviewed, who is a partial owner of the 76ers and is BFF with Meek Mill and is really the sort of driving force behind the Reform Alliance. Jay-Z was the only person who never once looked at his phone.
Send a link.
Welcome to Send a Link, where we analyze the latest feeds and reads. I'm Brandon Harrison with my co-captain, co-pilot, and co-clandestine operative, Deej Dollar. How was your weekend in Iowa, DJ?
Oh, I can't tell you about it.
Just got back.
Can't tell you about it.
I mean, I heard things went awry, you know, some shadow ink activity. I want to make sure that everything was smooth. You brought out the heat tech and the black turtleneck.
Yeah, everything went according to plan. I mean, it was a debacle.
It was a debacle, or that means it went well for you? Shadow ink.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Guys, we're trying to come to terms with a lot of things that are happening in the culture this past week. We had some ups, we had some downs, we had some good times. We've also clearly had a bout of political chaos in the past 3 days, just up and down and up and down and up and down. And as we're wont to do, we don't like to talk about it too much recently in the past, I don't know.
Especially federal, you know, I think it's important to... Yeah, it's good to delineate between the two. Hopefully your state's politics are a little better than national. Nationals is a
good thing to focus on.
State here is okay, pretty good.
Yeah, you know. MTA's got a, you know, half price fare for impoverished people.
For real?
Yeah, they did the new MTA fare program.
They had a special?
Yeah, half off. Half off at the MTA.
How do you apply? How do you
go up, you write in and say, "I'm old," or you say, "I got a bad leg," or something. Ooh. And then you're good. That's happening on a local level.
Pull up with the limp. No more broker's fees.
No more. Listen, man.
You got to have a party for that.
Things are happening. We're not getting robbed out here.
We have to pay another month's rent to fucking
just to find a place.
Look at the crib. Damn, what a racket.
It's terrible, man.
But it seems like you were talking about nationally.
Yeah.
Federally.
Yeah.
Shittily.
Things are awry, as we've seen. If you're listening to this, we are just hot off of the end of the impeachment saga, which found us where we all thought we would find us, with the Republican Party and supporters deciding that, hey, you know, they let you do it. You can do it. Do what you want to do out here.
Working across branches to protect one another. Yeah.
Thank you, DJ. You know, this is why we're a good team. Explains it all for you guys. Real clear. The Republican Party has absolved our President Trump of any, well, of that he did it, but it's cool.
Yeah, it doesn't. it fell into a morass of extreme dubiousness and subjectivity, and weak eighth grade debate team arguments.
Yeah.
A lot of misdirection and a lot of actual like tautological. Logical schemes.
Yeah.
You know, like,
if this is true, President Trump is president, can the president commit crime?
If he's the president.
Obviously, the answer is maybe.
Because he's the president. No, the main one was like, I'm not going to vote to commit because I'm not going to vote to commit.
just absurdities, man.
Okay.
We had that. We've had the unnecessary grandstanding and general bullshittery of the State of the Union. And then on Blue Team, we've had the general debacle that you caused earlier on Monday in Iowa.
From the mission.
Yeah.
What do they have out there? Butter? Isn't that big in Iowa?
Wheat?
Wheat?
Land? Flat land?
Flat. Flatland.
Harrison Barnes is from Iowa.
I forgot he's from Iowa.
Yeah.
That's why he has no swag.
That none. I got pulled over in Iowa once.
By Harrison Barnes? He the only nigga in Iowa. Or his family.
Enough chit-chat, DJ. We're trying to let you guys know it's dark times, but there are people that are looking out, people that are the leaders of our society that can help us see what can be better.
Maybe.
Yeah. Hopefully. Just people. There aren't people that inspire you, people that you look up to that you'd say, hey, I'm going to be like that guy.
Wow, you're more glass half full than I am usually.
Really?
Sounds like it.
Sometimes when I think about where I've come from personally and where I am now,
yeah.
I like to liken myself to somebody that grew up hard scrabble in the Marcy Projects and found their way to be one of my favorite corporatist multimillionaires, a Mr. Sean Carter.
Ah, yes. Sean J.C. Carter.
Yeah, Sean J.Z.
Hove.
Jigga. Jehovah.
Jehovah.
The God MC. Sure.
William H. Holla.
Oh, early Hove?
Jazzy.
Jazzy. Classic. If you watched the Super Bowl, if you had a fun weekend prior to the political shenanigans, you may have stayed for halftime and enjoyed the stylings of a halftime produced by the one and only Roc Nation.
Roc Nation.
And if you weren't aware, you're under a rock for the past. Excuse me.
Pun intended? The pun was so strong, you choked.
The rock got me under the rock. Under the rock for the past few years, you know that Jay-Z and Roc Nation became embroiled in the Kaepernick saga via first Hove's own sort of meta commentary about how, you know, I'm not going to play the Super Bowl. They need me. I need you. Yep. I'm using it for a bar. And then subsequently with him sitting down with Roger Goodell, having to twist out the most amazing late stage hair growth I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he's living his best life.
Son,
that's vegan shit.
Yeah, vegan shit. That's what it does.
I go vegan. Yeah.
Vegan diet and $500 million. Grow your shit out at 50.
Yeah, he wore a cap jersey as well on SNL, if you remember.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
He had a stance to make.
It was a subliminal.
Until he decided that, hey, this has to change. This isn't enough. We have to do more to make a change. We have to, quote unquote, sit at the table.
Motivated reasoning. We all have it.
Mm. I love it. It's delicious. So people were a little perturbed that Hove decided that he's going to, I guess, sit down with Roger Goodell, and they're going to develop this Inspire Change program that the NFL has, their philanthropy and sort of not only criminal justice, but mostly social justice projects that they want to push forward in a partnership with Jay-Z, Roc Nation, and in sort of the not the name, but the idea of what Colin wanted, which is not the best way for the whole thing to have gone out in terms of the way it looks for him or Jay-Z, but that's what was said by him and his team. And now we get the first collaboration between Jay, his team, with the Super Bowl 54.
LIV, yeah. 54.
Live.
Which
I'm pretty sure it was like, was or currently is a club in Miami as well.
Yeah, yeah. I believe it's still there.
I don't know. I don't know if that shit, you know.
Yeah, they come and go.
Niggas got shot up in
there. Yeah. King of Diamonds is going.
Yeah, it's funny that this happened this way because the first big performance we get with them is Shakira and J-Lo. And in any other year you have a performance like this, people would say, oh, you know, it's a tour de force and blah, blah, blah. They pick these people. They're doing this sort of thing that's hip and on brand for what music is like right now.
Less hip, more on brand.
I think. Thank you, DJ. And
although J-Lo is hot, our music is not hot.
It's generic schlock at this point. But for me, it was like, why did we need Jay-Z to do any of this / all of this? Did you see like that Inspire Change commercial they had during the Super Bowl? Did you watch it?
In passing. I mean, obviously I was in one of those, circumstances where, Everything is like loud and inaudible.
Right.
And inebriated and eating a lot of chicken.
Oh.
Type of situation. So not really totally paying attention. But I think we all kind of slowed down and watched as they did like mild cutting shots or reenactments of certain moments where people were telling testimonials about their own experiences or things that happened to their sons or what have you, right?
Yeah.
And clips of like guys like, who was that? Malcolm Jenkins and other NFL players, or Anquan Boldin specifically.
Right, yes.
Speaking to this effect regarding social justice and then all of its amorphousness to a degree.
Yeah, because there was a period when everyone talks about sort of the beef between Colin and then what Jay-Z had done, where a lot of the players kind of felt in a similar way about what are we actually going to do now? Like the kneeling thing is just like become such of an issue. But
yeah.
So this coming to the table thing, it's interesting. Who knows if it's going to mean anything long term, but it did say a lot about the effectiveness of one John Carter. Like this is definitely a moment for him. In the past few days, in the past month or so, because he did turn 50.
Yeah.
He turned 50 December 4th. Shout out, Sag Gang. And he's now put together the Super Bowl halftime show. He's collaborating not only with the Inspire Change program directly through the NFL, but the whole Reform Alliance.
Yeah, he got the whole collective to pony up at least, what, $100 million, purportedly, right?
Yes, man. Yes, indeed.
Okay, well, that's something.
So you got that going on.
Talks.
Obviously, the wild twist out. And as of yesterday, starting his Jay-Z talk series at Columbia University, did him and Jelani Cobb in conversation. So it's an interesting time to be Jay-Z. I don't know. It really feels weird. And looking at the piece that we have for this week, Jay-Z takes on the Super Bowl, Catherine Rossman. Really good inside look at the development of this whole beast of Jay-Z and social justice. How did this piece get pitched? How did that develop? Because it's a very thorough look at all the machinations behind the activism.
The reason that they had thought to come to me, this is my understanding of it. They might say different. My understanding of it was that they, because I don't cover music, I don't cover sports. I'm a general features reporter, and I do write about how all sorts of things connect with the culture, impact the culture. I mean, it wasn't a crazy thing that they came to me, but it wasn't an obvious thing. And my sense is that it relates to an article I wrote last March, I believe it is, about Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft had some trouble, as you may recall.
Yes.
And is that a nice way to put it?
Well put.
On a family podcast, that's how we'll say it. And I wrote a piece that I feel was fair, and a lot of people felt was fair. It took a broader look at who this guy is, and I talked a bit in the piece about that he had been adrift after his wife of, I believe, 52 years had died. It gave a little bit more of a full picture than purely a purient one that some, like, you know, 77-year-old dude shows up at a massage parlor. So I think that piece was somehow on the radar of the people at Roc Nation. So they come to me and say, are you interested? You know, they weren't handing me anything on a silver platter. They were sort of interested in having a conversation with me about it. And I said that I was, but that I was on a long-term project at that time in the summer and that I couldn't take on anything else. And they said that they would wait, that they weren't, you know, there wasn't like one reason or another that they were dying to do this to promote something. It was just something that was on the radar that they were trying to think about. And when this long-term project that I had been working on wrapped up, I reached out to them and said, you know, if you're still interested, I'm very interested and I'm ready to take on something else. And this was in November. And so I started having conversations with them just on background, both for them to get to know me and me to get a sense of what the company was about. And, you know, you, people have motives. You try to figure them out. Even, you know, I don't tell everyone my motives all the time, and I don't assume people are always telling me theirs, but it's part of the job to try to figure it out a little bit. So we had these various interactions, and I realized that the Super Bowl was coming up. And by that, you know, it was November, and, you know, it wasn't immediately, but to me, I started seeing what the company was doing with all of these social justice initiatives, which, as far as I saw them, were very genuinely and sincerely, I mean, they're very focused on this stuff, and it didn't seem like a show for me. And by that time, knowing what I knew about the deal with the NFL and some of the controversy with Kaepernick, there had just been the workout that had, you know, kind of gone bust, depending on how you look at it. Certainly didn't go great, but on either side.
And I
just felt like, you know what, this is a story to be pegged to the Super Bowl. And Jay's career had come to this moment. You know, the songs themselves are about social justice. The representation part of the business is about empowering athletes and artists to have agency over their own lives and their own finances. Then you put in Team Rock, which is about, you know, trying to bring justice for people all over the country, but also connecting the talent to that. And then, you know, the Meek Mill stuff, Reform Alliance, and then that brings us to the NFL. I kind of saw this tumbleweed gathering energy, and it really connected in my mind as a journalist, and that's the piece that I wrote.
How do you sort of feel about everything that you heard from all the people that you spoke to in the company about, I guess, Jay-Z the person? Like, how are you aware of him and, you know, sort of the culture, and what did the people say to make you feel like, all right, this is the idea I got about this figure and why he wants to push his social justice narrative and do this work?
Well, you know, you have to assume, when you're a reporter, you know, you have to assume you're being spun a little bit. You know, I mean, nobody's going up to a reporter and saying, let me tell you the worst thing that I've done, or let me tell you what a huge jerk my boss is. You know, I mean, you tend to hear, let me tell you what a huge jerk my ex-boss is. But, you know, so you have to, you know, I don't know that I have any greater, the people who work for him revere him. There is no doubt about that. And he I don't want to say he's running the show exactly, because Desiree Perez is actually running the show, but everything is being done, you know, sort of with his desires and wants and vision in mind. He's just a huge presence. I know there's essentially five principals at the company, and in, you know, various moments they'll say they're all equal, but this is his vision that's being executed by others. And so I don't think that any, I'm not saying that any of them have, you know, any secret. I can't assume that they're telling me, you know, every detail so that I have some great insight into Jay-Z that no other person has had before. I mean, that would be facile of me to believe that, but they believe in him, and they believe in the mission, and I could really sense their commitment to it. They're also entrepreneurs and capitalists, and there's no question about that. So there can be broader questions of, can you do well and do good? You know, like, can those things actually go together? Or as human beings, are we too driven, motivated by the do well part to really put enough focus on the do-good? I mean, those are real questions to ask, but that sort of broad philosophical stuff, putting that to the side, I do, you know, they do seem very, very committed to this stuff. And meeting with Jay-Z was very cool. And he is a really, really smart guy. I mean, I know I'm not breaking news with that, but I told my editor that I wasn't starstruck. I was brainstruck. Like, you really feel like you're sitting with like somebody who is a thinker on a level that is not what you normally interact with. I mean, that's how I felt. And maybe I'm just,
parlor trick for you or something? You made it like, did he do a cool parlor trick? What was the interaction like? What did you,
kind of little stuff. And again, like, I don't know if you guys are laughing with me or at me, and either one of them is fine. And maybe, you know, okay. if I can take it. My dad always used to say, don't have a glass jaw. You got to be able to take a punch. And I hope that, you know, by this stage in my career, I can take a punch. But he had two phones and his earbuds, and he never looked at his phone. And I found that notable. And I had by that point interviewed, you know, the other four major players in his company, being Desiree Perez, the CEO, Juan Perez, her husband, and the president of, you know, Roc Nation Sports, who's a, you know, an old friend of Jay-Z's and who ran Baseline Studios. There's Tay-Tay Smith, who he's known since he was a kid in the Marcy Projects, who's the head of A&R. And then there's Jay Brown, who is the chairman of the company. So Michael Rubin I interviewed, who is a partial owner of the 76ers and is BFF with Meek Mill and is really the sort of driving force behind the Reform Alliance. Jay-Z was the only person who never once looked at his phone. And we all know what that's like. It's hard to sit with someone for more than an hour, which is, I think we sat for more than an hour, and he was just very, very present and focused. So first of all, that kind of said something. I don't know. Do you agree? Isn't that sort of,
yeah, I mean, I can't do it.
In this moment? Yeah. And it was the day before his Grammy brunch. There were, you know, athletes who had flown in from, you know, who knows where, who were all over the office. It was a week before the Super Bowl, 2 weeks before he's having an Oscar party. And he was just, you know, fully present. And, you know, I asked questions that I thought were, you know, that I thought were probing. And there's, you know, plenty of criticism on Twitter that, it, you know, that I didn't. And I think that there's a fair argument to be made that, you know, it's hard to get in everything. And it's, you know, something can feel like a tough question and somebody answers it very calmly and all of a sudden it feels like a softball. And sometimes you ask a softball question, someone gets pissed off and you're like, wow, I really, you know, asked the tough one. So it's a little bit of a relative concept anyway. But I asked a lot about the Kaepernick stuff. I asked a lot about going into business with the NFL and how people should feel about that. And whether, you know, what he says to people who say he's a sellout. I mean, I said all that to him. And he, you know, was really, you know, sort of calm and answered and seemed to be thoughtful to really sort of, you know, give me some perspective on it. He told me the stuff about when he had been asked or, you know, was in conversations at least to do the Super Bowl halftime show. I believe it would have been when the game was in Minneapolis, and that they asked him if he would bring Kanye and Rihanna for Run This Town. And he was like, that is just such an uncool way to try to book talent. You know, he was very, I think he was honest. It seems like he was honest. Nobody's told me I got any of that stuff wrong. So, but there was a funny thing that happened that didn't make it into the story because I had so much material. When I first arrived there, there's a lot of activity in the office because so many people, people from the New York office, and I think the Nashville office had come to town for the Grammys and for the Grammy brunch. Plus, like Todd Gurley was there with some of his friends. The New York Times photographer was there. There was like activity going on, and they've just moved into this new office. So, Jay-Z is walking around and talking to various people about and having his picture taken. And there was this couch, this like green sort of round semicircle couch. And he just kind of like stopped over it and was clearly like there was something wrong with the couch. And I couldn't hear or fully know, but it was like it was somehow like slightly at the wrong angle or in the wrong place. I mean, this was like a gorgeous couch in this gorgeous office, but there was something off with it. And an employee runs over and is like, we'll fix it. It'll be taken care of. It seemed like such a small thing for Jay-Z to be focused on. Then later when, after I had interviewed him, I was interviewing Jay Brown, and we're sitting in Jay Brown's office, and Jay-Z sort of like, you know, knocks on the door, opens it, kind of, you know, opens it just a little, pops his head in, asks Jay Brown a question. I don't remember what it was about. Jay Brown answers it, and Jay-Z shuts the door. And then 2 seconds later, he opens the door again, and referring to the door next door to Jay Brown's office, he said, "This door is messed up. It does, when it shuts, it's not flush to the jamb. Like it sticks out a little bit." And Jay Brown's like, "Okay, we're going to get it fixed. Don't worry." He's like, "No, but like, this is like a problem." Jay Brown's like, "We got it. Don't worry." And Jay-Z shuts the door. And Jay Brown said, "He's so OCD." And I kind of loved that. And I laughed and he said, "You know, the details he focuses on," he said, "it's crazy."
So this is like, thank you once again for your time. My last question, and if you could really think about this one, what's your favorite Jay-Z lyric?
Well, I don't know. You know, I listen to music with my kids a lot, and I've been listening to a lot of Jay-Z. Which can be, you know, sort of interesting with your kids. And my daughter pointed out recently, she's like, I can't believe that you like yell at me about some of the stuff that I want to listen to when, you know, you're listening to Jay-Z all the time, which I felt like was fair. But I love Made in America, where it's almost like a little bit of a history lesson, like, I know this isn't his verse necessarily, but when it's like Sweet King Martin, Sweet Queen Coretta, I love that song. I love a lot of the lyrics in Hard Knocks Life, and I love the way that mashes up. I love Dirt on My Shoulder. So I know I'm not giving you a lyric, and I'm just rattling off songs, but...
Those are classics.
Anyway, thank you guys for your time, and thank you for reading, and thank you for reading it and hearing me out.
Have you seen the Diddy thing at the Rock Nation brunch or whatever? His like quote, his like little toast he had about.
They do a lot of toast there, so can you catch me up with
yeah,
this?
So as you've said, Rock Nation brunch is a lot of, you know, people feeling themselves, and
it's like Grammys counter programming, right?
Yeah, niggas just like, you know, fuck the Grammys. We're gonna be here. We're gonna all wear pastel suits, talk about how great we are. Yeah, you want to come to this party and see Diddy, Jay-Z, and I don't know, Dave Chappelle on scooters and shit. Just niggas just bloviating over themselves. So at one point, Diddy makes a grandstanding speech about Black billionaires and how they have to do it, stick together, and blah blah blah. Grammys don't respect this, blah blah. What is why Grammys important? And then Mace made a post on Instagram all about him trying to buy his masters back from Diddy and how bad Diddy's like fucked him over on this over years. And right. and how the fact that he was like, hey, when you signed me to this deal, I was 19. If you bought it for 20K, I never really wanted to ask you at this point. But now, like now I have money. I've tried to buy back my masters for $2 million. You told me that you would rather wait till somebody, a white person, you're talking about black, you know, empowerment and shit, would outbid me for it when you could just do me a solid and just let me have my masters back and help me out. But you talking about all this black excellence stuff, which is, you know, valid. But it does present an interesting point when talking about Jay, because it's like we all know Jay-Z as character is the hyper-capitalist rapper, right?
Yeah.
You know, 92 bricks, got them all back. You know, like, you know, it's me. He can flip it. He can make some money. He makes a bread.
Of course.
And now... And the piece does a good job of looking into just the whole arm of this Roc Nation philanthropy, because the beast of Roc Nation over the past, I guess, 10 years or so, when he sort of made that deal with Live Nation, and it's growing, and then it's like, oh, we want to do something. And then the Meek Mill thing happens, and then the Cleef Browder documentary, and all the people that he's sort of slyly worked with, and they kind of do things undercover. Even Mississippi right now, the jails in Mississippi, they're...
Parchman Prison.
Yeah, they're working on... that situation. So it's really, and I don't know, it's kind of conflicting when you think about what it means to be a black billionaire at this point for me.
You find that, where do you find the conflict there?
Well, it's like the persona of these people, it makes you concerned a little bit, because it's like, damn, all of our best activists are rappers and shit and entertainers, and where does that leave us when sort of the market value of these people is built upon a nebulous sort of effuse thing that doesn't really provide a level of value to the point where you have somebody like Diddy who are like, oh, okay, what is he doing with it? But then the flip side, like, how many people did he fuck over to get this far and blah, blah, blah? And it's any,
yeah,
it's any billionaire, right?
That's the nature of the system. I mean,
but where are we at? But for us now, as, you know, quote unquote, colored people, right? You know, there's this social aspect that we're hanging on to, that it's like, it's easy to be a cutthroat. It's easy to be Jeff Bezos, you know, and everybody expects him to like, fuck up
anybody. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have to abide by the pretense of any kind of social solidarity that is more, you know, commonplace amongst black folk. And he doesn't really talk that talk, so he definitely doesn't have to walk that walk at the same time. Compared to your Diddy or Hov being at these Roc Nation brunches or setting up these foundations to have more of a front-facing social justice or just collective economic or pro-prosperity for black people stance. So it can be tenuous, and there'll be holes in that because it's just the nature of the capitalist system. I mean, these people have the most power and the biggest microphones, particularly because they have some of the most money amongst black people in the country, if not the world. And at the same time, they have a lot of cultural capital. So it always just depends on how they deploy it. I think it's been consistently dependable. I mean, commendable for like a Jay-Z to do a lot of that behind the scenes work. I guess now they want to put a bit more of a front-facing aspect to it. But it's been known for at least the past few years that he would send money or bail people out of jail, activists and whatnot, actually quite frequently, without actually putting his name or his wife's name on it. So that man probably will continue. I can only think that he's operating in mostly good faith. But it does become difficult when you are such a large, when you're a relative financial giant, you wind up, stepping on people at the same time.
Squish them.
When was
the last time we saw Dame Dash crying somewhere? Recently, right?
He hasn't been crying. He's been trying to like, was avoiding court. He had to leave New York. You know this shit? Like, no. He got in some type of legal dispute. Some shit. I mean, he's out here.
I'm just joking, because he would always have commentary about their relationship or wouldn't talk about it or things like that.
Yeah, but that's
business, right?
That's, yeah, I mean, word to fucking Rico, right? I mean, business is business. So it's pretty slimy. And a lot of people were looking askance at this partnership that was built up with the NFL. I know you and I talked about it at the start. Because I think what wound up happening was everyone became understandably polarized on the issue, whether you were pro Kaepernick or pro.
I have a hot take on this too.
Right. So just vaguely pro NFL, right? And it became relatively zero sum. And over time, from what I saw, it started to be that neither side looked particularly virtuous or good. Over time, the Kaepernick started to come up with a lot of. He was offered an opportunity to like try out for a couple teams a couple months ago, and through his own rigidness or his representation, completely just botched it. It just turned into a shit show on both sides, and that was known that Jay-Z, amongst others, was really pushing for teams to at least give him a tryout. So you're looking on that, and you're like, okay, well. They're trying to extend an olive branch, albeit however short it was, but you don't really take it, or you just continue to try to make them look like a fool to like, okay, to what effect? Is your effect that you want to be just this civil rights icon and live as a symbol, as a Nike endorser? Okay, cool. Well, that just means that you're not going to be able to play in the NFL. On the whole side, it's like, okay, I'm trying to use a larger platform of the NFL while also, you know, still at least throwing the olive branch out to Kaepernick. And for how long can we keep this pattern going?
This is my hot take.
Niggas love football. Niggas love NFL. Eventually time's going to heal a lot of those wounds, and people are going to just slowly peel off into catching NFL every now and then, to the point where, you know, I'm at a Super Bowl party for my friend's birthday. Like, I'm not about to close my eyes or be up here throwing up a black power fist for the next 50 years because, you know, Colin Kaepernick was, you know, he had a message and he was blackballed out the NFL, but also had his complications as well. So what should
I
take, though?
I was going to say that Jay-Z was right, man.
On what part?
It's time to move on, man. It's time to move on. And to actually do something actionable, whether that is producing a halftime show or, you know.
Well, that's just like the Rock Nation.
Yeah, but, you know, because he had to grease his palm a little bit while he did Inspired Change too.
Right.
But the idea that if you're going to be a figure that is going to say that, hey, it's more important for me to do this than to play, then you got to stand by that. That's the thing that bothers me the most is like, you're still trying out. Don't try out no more. Go play for fucking Canada. Play in Canada League.
You would think. That's what I'm saying. It became a very strained circumstance over the past year and a half or so where he definitely wasn't getting no shots. Don't get me wrong. But he also did not. I'm not saying he should go the fucking like Michael Vick route. Remember Michael was like, yeah, he just need to cut his hair. Like, I ain't saying that shit at all. But, you know, we're all part of systems and have to make deals or accommodate. And maybe on both sides, people feel like, you know, you got half a loaf. But if both sides get half a loaf, then that might be more progress than a type of zero-sum game. And on this end, when it comes to the money and the power, Kaepernick is now locked outside of the league. So it is what it is at a certain point. Yeah, but this is part of capitalist systems and labor relations, and Hov is now, you know, buddied up with Goodell and all of them.
Yeah, they're boys and shit hanging out.
And that part is,
I love Roger.
Yeah, and they had some glowing commentary about Roger in the piece I saw from a couple of Rock Nation employees. Like, yeah, Roger's great, you know, whatever the fuck. He's competent enough, so. That's what happens as well, though. When you get to those levels, you start to buddy up with more unsavory figures or figures that are just as capitalist as you, which mean they've stepped on as many people as you have, if not more, or they're more cutthroat than you. This is how the U.S. has had such a long-standing relationship with, like, Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is fucking terrible, but they haven't had oil. So, you know, it's just
hold
like some
Saudi Arabia?
No. Hov is like America and Saudi Arabia is the NFL. It's like shitty in so many ways. but you make the deal because they got what you want. They have, or I mean, this is not a perfect analogy.
It's one to one.
NFL has a certain platform. They have a massive platform. It's the only remaining like American religion in many ways. So like mass culture. So when it comes to that, it makes plenty of sense for him to try to plug in and use his own cultural capital, his own celebrity to jolt it a little bit to bring it like a bit along on his side and to be more to the social justice benefit for Black people.
You know, what's funny is about this too, when I think about where this is going to go for people like Hov and Diddy and even like the Oprahs and all these people that are, mm-hmm. you know, are figures that are around. How's this going to be made most actionable? Because, all right, Jay-Z's partnering with the NFL. Okay, cool. What does that really mean? The criminal justice stuff that he's been doing, great. Mm-hmm. But when I looked at that like fucked up Trump commercial, you know, Kim Kardashian like getting this like one like Black woman to like, yeah, how are we like, is it going to be more shit like that happening when we're going to get used out of this desire to do some activism? And then something, even something as sort of nondescript as Diddy's school. It's like,
I didn't know you had a school.
The thing in Harlem, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but it's like school choice, charter schools. And then it's like a thing where it's like, oh, so instead of like getting this situation where we raise taxes here, we just open all these Black charter schools and shit. And then it's just like a thing where it just feels like this weird pastiche that I hope just doesn't become a thing where all these one-off projects become like, look at these Black people. They helped. This is how, look, it's this working, Republicanism.
This is how we improve the country. Just, it's like, you were like one-off stories and shit. You got some old lady out of jail and shit.
It's just like.
But, you know, five more young niggas going in.
Look, inspire like, change. Yeah. Anquan Boldin, something.
Right. You know, and you don't want to be too cynical, but I definitely can agree with that. There have been, you know, a lot of criticism about Jay-Z's partnership with the NFL because the main, most poignant criticism was like, you didn't have to do this. You could have took your money and right. or cultural capital, your celebrity, your platform, and applied it to something else more, something else public as well. And it probably would have had, you know, its own version of a large effect. So that I agree with that 100%. But at the same time, I can't understand why you would use something like the NFL. Would I do it if I were him? I don't know. I can't call it. But that definitely is valid because like little one-off shit, sure, that's nice that, you know, Kim K got this woman pardoned by Donald Trump. But there are a lot of people in prison for systematic type of reasons. And people are working at it. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not giving it to cynicism, but sometimes that's not like the sexy thing.
It just takes like a little more actual thought about what your actions are going to do. Because even to say Jay-Z is going to do a talk series, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to start a talk series and he's going to interview people and it's going to be a big deal in New York. Why do it at Columbia?
Because it has cachet.
That's what I'm right. saying. But like, yeah. You're Jay-Z. If you took that shit to somewhere that could, I don't know, CUNY.
Okay. Or to just the corner outside of Marcy.
Well, damn. That's what
CUNY. I'm just saying, like, you can always second guess this shit a lot. So I'm always a little slow to do this. But
I don't mean it like in that sense. But I like that's like an institutional choice, you know?
Yeah.
For it to be like, you know, kids that probably need it most aren't at fucking Columbia, you know? Like, I don't know.
I need to hear that. Need to hear those conversations.
Yeah, like, you know, because, like, why not do it at the city college? Like, I don't know. Just, like, little shit like that is never really thought about when it's the thing that could actually start to push shit more in a way that's not like, it's not, like, I get it. I love Hov. I love the idea of being a rich nigga.
You love like, Columbia?
I like the idea of Columbia. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like it. We all know nice things.
That's what I was about to say.
But it's like,
I think it becomes a class thing. Yeah.
If it's like, it's on the fringes of the shit you do, you can make an effort to make it not a class thing. Like, that's such a small thing that didn't have to happen. Like you said, yeah. It didn't have to be the NFL. It didn't have to be Columbia, you know?
Yeah. No, that I absolutely agree. And I think that's why going on a relative tangent or what have you, but a Bernie Sanders' campaign has been so successful because it is relative class solidarity, class warfare, with the lower classes trying to rebel against the moneyed elites. Truthfully, not like in a fake, you know, revanchist Donald Trump type of way. So if you keep it there, you will, you know, in the lower classes, the real people out here in the streets or in the housing, Marcy housing projects, there are more people and more people there and more people that actually need some of this help or some of this guidance that the upper class can provide, like somebody like JC can do. But they'll listen to 444 and get pieces of it. They just can't hear him talk with Jelani Cobb.
Yeah, life's complicated. You know, we're not here to be cynicists.
Cynics.
Yeah. Thank you, DJ. But I don't know. It's messed up to think about. Piece is really good. But shout out to Ho. 50 years, a full and luxurious twist out.
Him and his son.
And a fire and a fire halftime show. I can't fade it. Can we talk about something that I don't pay much attention to? I don't think you do either, but I found an interesting deep dive.
Sure.
Network television. It stinks.
I hope the mic picked up that little noise I made. That was good.
No, it was good. It was audible. I heard it in the headphone. happy 10th anniversary to Undercover Boss, the most reprehensible propaganda on TV. We're getting our big socialist back today.
I'm honestly not fucking socialist, but certain aspects.
You're not socialist, comrade. You're not about the worker.
Not red rose.
you're not about the working man.
I'm cool with something like what's that shit? Sweden, Norway.
Oh yeah. So a socialist utopia with only enough people.
They all look alike.
yeah. Eugenicists. Sweden. Norway, Wakanda. Mwah, that's perfect.
Yeah, let's go with Wakanda.
Rwanda's actually like that. You heard about Rwanda lately?
It's lit.
Is low-key Singapore? Like, you know, you throw some gum out and shit, you get caned and flogged.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, it's very clean, though. Very neat. Alex McLeavy at AV Club. DJ, have you seen this show? Because I have a reference, an intra-pod reference about the show all the time that I reference, but...
I'm definitely familiar, obviously. But I just knew I would be contemptuous of something like that, so I've actually never really watched it. I've probably seen it in passing. Definitely seen it in passing. And it all seems, had always seemed extremely staged to me.
Accurate.
Like preordained and kind of crass. Like, oh yeah, I'm the boss here. I'm about to... fuck with the grunts at the bottom. Flip a burger.
It's so fun, isn't it? It's hilarious, man. So my big exposure to the show, which I've only seen through one time, but you're aware of it. It's in the cultural zeitgeist. And it's been on 10 years, the 9th season starting this month. And at some point, maybe the 5th or 6th season, I saw my guy, RIP to the God, the owner of Golden Crust Dog.
Oh yeah,
we talk about this. This is part of the pod memes we have.
Yeah. But what theme is that?
No, it's a pod meme. It's coming back.
Oh, just homie's apparent suicide.
I mean, not like that. But just the fact that it was a thing that happened.
It did happen.
No, he was on the Golden Crust CEO was on an episode, and they gave him a fake dread wig for some reason. They sent him to the beef patty warehouse. They sent him to like one of the stores to mess with one of the kitchen guys. And the guy was like, you know, I didn't make my own flavors because the recipe book is garbage. And he was talking.
So he was talking shit about it.
Yeah. Lowell Hawthorne, RIP dog. One of the biggest bosses, Golden Crust.
That we've seen thus far.
And the premise of having him go around to the warehouse. And I was like, damn, I didn't know Golden Crust made it this far that they could be featured on this show first and foremost. But it was just so absurd that no one noticed him. No one would like call him out or was aware of what he looked like.
No one was keen on the camera crews that were following him around.
Right.
Yeah.
And to the point where at the end of the show, considering my incredulousness about it, and I guess anyone else that would be watching about it, they had one of the guys in the warehouse. He's like, yeah, I kind of knew it was you. Like he just openly says it.
Of course I knew.
It was hilarious. But the piece really talks about how foul the concept of this show is.
Yeah.
Considering that, okay, on its surface,
It's a fun thing. It's undercover boss. They're like, how is it like to live like these people? Whoa, I need to learn empathy. Whoa. And it's like simple enough. But considering that it was airing right after Super Bowl, considering that it's been 10 years, considering we're living in this time where, as you said, Bernie got the socialist uprising coming. It's coming, comrade.
It was airing in the throes of the recovery, the beginning of the recovery.
The beginning of the recovery.
After the Great Recession.
When it was almost at its most tone deaf, but it's continued. The propagandist nature of it is just so absurd with the plot of the boss coming in, being confused about how things work. I don't know how to do this stuff. I don't know how to type. I don't know how to flip burgers. I don't know how to drive a tractor trailer. Does none of that. Realizes, oh, wow.
This shit is harder than I thought.
This shit is hard. And these people that do this job, they are valuable people in and of themselves.
One lost his leg on the machine over there. He gave him a week off.
And that is the piece of the piece that really sort of stood out to me was the gradual solidification of the narrative of the show and how these narratives have people trying to manipulate the way the show is going. Because the camera crew thing is, it's posited as either an intra-company like training thing or some kind of commercial for the company or something like that. And people have started to go as far as to like just mention shit that they need, because they, no matter what, they interview these people and it's like, yeah, man, I really want to, you know.
I'd love to start up a franchise of one of these.
I like to start up a franchise. Mm-hmm. I really need time off to do this. This other location is closer to my family. I would love to be there. To the point where the way that's offered up in the narrative is just so ridiculous. It's not even... It's just...
Because then at the end, oftentimes the boss apparently grants these guys wishes on occasion. Like, okay, nigga, well, you can have a week off to vacation in Hawaii because you haven't been on a break in 10 years.
Enjoy, peasant.
Like, I'm flying to Singapore on my jet, you know? So it definitely is one of those ideas that probably sounds good in the boardroom and maybe in practice at a smaller operation, maybe.
Right. Not Nestle.
Not fucking, yeah, not Nestle. Not when you're getting paid, 10,000 times more than whoever's fucking making the chocolate in the back or whatever it is. You know what I mean? So that comes with that class, not conflict, but the multitudes between the classes, and how people in these boardrooms or that made the show never noticed that it would come off so poorly through the proper lens. And also, quite honestly, for the majority of us that are working class, middle class, and below, it shows how just beaten the fuck down we are.
You know? Yeah.
Because it's just like, oh, yeah, this is great. This is great. Oh, little Tony, he got a trip to fucking Hawaii.
Someone gifted, like, this CEO came in and changed the system works.
he came down from his private jet and changed. He saw that women were pissing in cans. I saw the anecdote on that.
Yeah.
So he decided to change. He had a working group to change the policy. Oh, wow.
This is how it works.
That's what it took.
It's just individual benevolence is where we are to expect any sort of change. And it's really...
some sense of or shame, basic morality.
Right.
But if we know anything about systems and markets, understandably so, markets just on their own is not a mechanism of morality. It's based on a trade. And then when you put it together, it's based on profits and losses. And it's more profitable for these companies to pay people as little as they can, to give as few benefits as they can, and for them to accrue as much capital as they can to continue it on.
You know, it's funny too, in terms of accruing capital, outside of the exploitative worker-boss relationship,
is
the shitty advertisement aspect of it too.
Yeah.
It's like, at this Toll House factory, we make cookies. These are good. Like, just like, yeah. I mean, if I was a a television executive. I'm like, wow, we just totally inception the concept of television. Because it's like, oh, we don't got to do commercial breaks.
You don't have to do a fucking commercial.
Like, this is a commercial.
Yeah. And it pulls at your heartstrings. Because at the end, dude with no leg, they finally upgrade his insurance so he can get a fucking prosthetic. You know, like, some random shit like that. Yeah, it's pretty gross. I don't know. Hopefully it goes away soon. And how could people not notice after this point, after 10 years? You got some dude with like a weird fake nose on and a dreadlocks.
I think people are just playing along like, yo, I got to just pretend. I can get my knee surgery.
It just becomes a finesse. Yeah, I forgot. It becomes this, as you said, like just based on extremely individual actions or acts of benevolence for these tearjerker occurrences that happen though in every single episode. It all is just pretty blah.
DJ.
Brandon.
We're in dark times politically. We've talked about that shit ad nauseum this episode. But maybe if we look across the world, we can understand that it's not so bad for us. It's just as bad everywhere else, too.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know where you were going with that, but that seems about right.
I'm big pessimism gang. I'm big it's not going to work out gang. I'm big cynicism. That's my bag. I'm all the way in it.
Oh, yeah. Number one investor.
We're going back to the times. DJ, I was about to give us our title, but
got hit with the paywall.
And the paywall, man. I got ran into it like I'm in like in communist China, man.
Maybe Katie can bless you.
Katie got to bless us with something.
I mean,
a little help.
I am a paid subscriber.
Oh man, I'm getting shamed. I am too. I'm just not logged in.
Oh, okay, that's what he's saying as he's
yes
fidgeting. But are you talking about the piece Gandhi's killer? Evokes admiration as never before?
Yes, I am. It's in the New York Times.
In the Times by Samir Yassir?
Yes. And I had it on my phone. I got it, Samir Yassir. In the wake of Trumpism, Tea Partyism, far-right absurdity, Brexit,
yeah,
the second most populated country in the world, is also in a far-right religious ethno-separatist movement, well, which is sort of the beginning of the country, mind you. So,
separation.
But it's back.
Partition.
Nathoram Godsey. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, that's a little tough.
Nathoram Godsey. That sounds probably more accurate in my head.
Godsey.
He's hot right now. He's in vogue.
In vogue. Known for being the Gandhi's assassin.
Yeah.
And has been venerated by Hindu nationalists off and on from that point on up until now, reaching a relative new peak in light of the, not even burgeoning, the nearly full-throated Hindu nationalist movement strained throughout the entire country, yes. Embodied by their prime minister, Narendra Modi.
Yes, this Modi's India, highly... he's using this Hindu nationalist movement to bolster his popularity.
Popularity, power. He's an effective politician as well. So he's not, I mean, honestly, most of these other fucking right-wing figures are more competent than Trump, you know what I mean? But he's multifaceted, but represents this BJP party. Which is an Indian term, which is probably, I'll probably have a difficult time pronouncing. But the tangent to this story is that party's roots connect to the group that represented Gandhi's assassin, in short. So it's something that's existed since the birth of the Indian democracy after... Yes. Separation after breaking away from England, if I'm correct?
Yes, indeed. In the late 1940s, DJ, you're aware of this. I'm not sure if listeners are. If you're in this podcast for the shits and giggles and Jay-Z talk, you may not know the history of India itself. Obviously, ancient nation, Ganges River, all that kind of stuff. Dope.
you know, historical mysticism, great knowledge, good food, blah, 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 all that. And then, of course, British occupation. The Brits used it for its great number of population, fertile land, blah, 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 all that. I forget the big war when they used to give the Indian officers beef straps on their guns and then you had to bite it off to load their guns. And there was a big revolt about that because obviously...
Yeah, cows are a sacred animal in the Hindu religion.
So that was a big issue. And upon partition, within our living memory in the late 40s and early 50s after World War II, India gets its freedom from the British Empire and the religious aspect of India with Muslims and Hindus decided to divide the country into what is known as Pakistan, and India, which with Pakistan being two countries, East and West Pakistan,
at the time, okay,
currently with East Pakistan now known as Bangladesh,
and there was also a region in India, northern part of India, Kashmir,
yes,
that still was majority Muslim, but it was semi-autonomous, but part of the Indian government, from my understanding. So now that everybody has caught up a little bit throughout this extremely complicated and long history. Mm-hmm. So don't let us fool you as if we're Indian historians. This is a country with a population over 1 billion people. A massive democracy was known to be the largest democracy in mankind. Nominated and support.
Can vote easily, more than we can. continue.
Yeah, so, I mean, and they support Modi, and they support a lot of these draconian measures that have tried to make a more purist take on having a solidly Hindu nation. A lot of things that have led to this point. Demagoguery, economic constraints, social, what's my favorite term?
Disarray, disorder, disarray. Strife.
Culture wars, sorry.
Culture wars, yeah.
Fighting over cows, as you said, you know, and I have a good through line for you.
Yeah.
A good paragraph here in the piece. The availability of cheap mobile data plans in much of the countryside has helped create an ecosystem of disinformation in which it is difficult to sift facts from fiction. WhatsApp messages shared widely in rural areas say that Mr. Godse had not killed Gandhi. If Mr. Godse had not killed Gandhi, India would have fallen apart of the What the fuck is wrong with me? Sorry, I don't have the phone in my hand.
It's all right. We're all struggling today.
India would have fallen apart as the Soviet Union did. Other messages call Gandhi a womanizer. So the continued emergence of social media and the internet around the world, and obviously locally here in the U.S., has allowed a lot of disinformation to spread as a means of getting an emotional response from people, spreading disinformation, mobilizing coalitions, causing just general social upheaval for political purposes. And that clearly has been a large part of this, to where people, based on their own preconceived notions, supported by relative disinformation that they're getting from these massive WhatsApp chains.
Yep.
You may be familiar if you know anybody that's just relatively foreign, whether they're from the Caribbean or like WhatsApp is huge.
It's popping.
It'd be like literally tens of thousands of people with some in WhatsApp chats. So it's gotten to the point now where this movement, this internationalist movement, and the assassin Gautier have been put back on a relative pedestal, to where people are defacing Gandhi statues throughout the country, decapitating them, and a weird yogi guy in a part of the country wants to rename his town, or rename the town after the assassin Gautier.
It's such a weird analogous thing to what we're going through, and with the idea of these individual statues and icons. It's funny how that is the thing in sort of both sides of the globe that people hold on to with these nationalist movements, considering, you know, what we have over here with the Civil War shit and them,
yeah.
And which is a weirder specific, considering all the
political and military strife that they've gone through, the partition and then the mass migration of people to make it, I guess, this figure of Gandhi and an assassin to be at the center of the culture wars is really weird, you know?
Yeah, and it calls upon the relatively short cultural memory that large groups have, especially when it comes to relative traumas or trying to attack the out-group or the minority. So you look here, and we don't acknowledge the massive wars that the country went through, whether it's the Civil War or World War One, World War Two, so on and so forth, Vietnam. And because of that, it leads to continued bad decisions by our country's leaders. And Gandhi, the aperture is a little different. I think they're trying to live out the most like unadulterated vision for what they saw of the country. When at the founding of the country, Gandhi and his contemporaries specifically wanted it to be a secular democracy,
right?
In order to avoid any one religious sect from cordoning off all the power and then crushing all the dissidents or all of the non-believers or whatever that religion is. Obviously, it's Hinduism in this case. So that was in order to hopefully build a bit of social cohesion and human decency between different groups. But when you have just the relative time passing, and as I already had mentioned, with the growth of social media and whatnot, the social media is always dependent on just groups as a whole. And when you use that power for nefarious means or for disinformation, it will continue to rile people up. And then you have the demagogues and the resourceful ones that will take advantage of it.
Right. Sure. I mean, ultimately, it's not really about, I guess, the movement, because it would just be a fringe thing if it wasn't for the people on the top that say, hey, we can utilize this fervent energy to maintain our own sort of political purposes. Kind of sad.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes from here. I mean,
especially with a country that large,
Yeah, and they can't be relatively constrained by any other international figures, albeit besides a stern talking down to from the UN. The country is far too big, far too powerful to really accede to any of that. So all we can rely on is good journalism, maybe a bit of public shaming, as I said, maybe from like the UN when it comes to these laws forbidding Muslims from entering the country. Kashmir has been shut down in a military state for the past couple months or years, and the emergence of Modi as a prime minister, albeit not facially admitting that he's trying to establish a Hindu nationalist state. But through his actions, obviously making it
actions, clear. A little few mixed messages, things that are a little cloaked undercover. It's the best way to do it.
Yeah, if you're politically savvy, yeah, for sure. So I don't know. We wanted to go a little worldwide. It's pretty dark in this case, but I mean, it's still instructive for all of us to make sure you have the record right. Or understanding of history, right?
Right.
And then when things are challenged, then we're able to push back on it. Thankfully, here is it's part of the core of the problem, but it's extremely diverse. So our media or journalistic outlets, they act as the means of clarifying everything and trying to separate truth from fact, but that's always hard to discern as well.
And that leaves us hanging most of the time. I guess what I would say is what makes me feel like I have faith and believe that it's going to be all right is that one day some rich person will come in to solve it all, right?
Well,
because that's how it works, right?
Mark Zuckerberg's actions are directly responsible for this piece being written. As I said, even just that one note about WhatsApp.
That must be lit. Just be like, land back and be like, yeah, I'm out destroying the world. Y'all can't stop me. I'm Lex Luthor.
It's a completely offhandedness that leads to just like social decay. Like people have to be organized in some ways. Have to
Can't sell ads with
some,
it.
Some bit of truth.
Ads rule the world and they're evil. To bring it full circle to the Super Bowl and large social movements ran by social media companies. All because of...
I did not enjoy the ads either.
You didn't? Mm-mm. You didn't like Sabra Hummus and Ric Flair?
I don't even remember
you
that.
You didn't like Tom Brady lying to you about Hulu?
No.
You didn't like Mr. Peanut?
I did like with the baby thing, right?
Yeah.
What was it? Nutborn? What was it?
Baby Nut.
Baby Nut? I did like the Martin Scorsese one, though.
No, him and Jonah Hill?
Yeah.
What was that an ad for exactly?
I don't even fucking
That's
know.
The biggest thing. It's like, look, we got 8 celebrities. We got 9 celebrities.
It's just was like Pringles or some shit.
Some shit. That was Rick and Morty was for Pringles. That was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I already had seen that one before, but it was fine.
It was, man. So, yeah, be positive, y'all. Feel good about where, I guess, this dystopia is headed in social decay.
Stay off social media. Stay out of India.
And become
Hindu.
Yeah, and become rich. Yeah.
Become rich.
And become rich, and then you can help all these little poors with it, whether it's your job or wherever. You can save the world.
Yeah, it's very melancholy. Over here.
Oh, we got to end on an up note.
Yeah.
Free ice cream.
Don't we all love free ice cream? I'm more of a gelato guy. So
peace.